What's going on, guys? Welcome to River City 93, brought to you by the Beautiful Game Network, Roughneck Scars, and of course, For the Culture. I'm your host, Elliot Barr. Joining me as always,
Shaneer Duran.
You want to start? It's a 1-0 loss to Ford.
Yeah. So I guess Ford Madison wins the Henny Derby.
They do. They win the third time. First of all, let's talk about the atmosphere. So we had the Flock, Featherstone Flamingos. I think some people from La Brava, 607 came down. North Carolina FC decided we want to come support a former player in Turbo. So you had their Hispanic group, whose name is escaping me right now. And you had Oak City supporters come up. And I gotta say, man, the atmosphere was lit. Like, it was...
Yes. It was electric in there.
It was, man.
At least on that side of the stadium where the two fan groups were separated by two sections and going at it. Just
it was, man.
It was noise the entire game. It was loud. It was intense. It was electric atmosphere.
And the crazy thing was, it was like everyone got along. Because you know how normally you hear, like, when rival supporters group come in town, it's like that weird animosity of, like,
yeah,
we don't like you because you support them. But it was like, yo, we're enemies for 90 minutes, but it was like everyone was friendly. Everyone was having a good time.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know there were black people in Wisconsin until this game.
Yeah.
So that was dope. Also, I got to say, like, this game that was a made-up derby between us and Featherstone Flamingos. Let me just backtrack real quick. For those who want to know the history of the Henny Derby, pretty much it started, I, Elliot, bet Kyle of Featherstone Flamingos a bottle of Hennessy for the first game. That's pretty much how it started. There's not no elaborate story.
Yeah.
that's pretty much how it started. It's like a black fan reunion. That's it. But I got to say, in the building, we had For the Culture. We had Jason Day. We had Andy Sneez. We had a total soccer show. We had a whole host of people. Like, these are guys that cover MLS.
Yes.
So for them to come to, like, a USL League One game.
It was intense. It was intense. It was crazy. The atmosphere was wonderful. I mean, setting aside what happened on the pitch. I mean, what happened on the pitch happened on the pitch. It was a very back-and-forth game. Two evenly matched sides. But the fans were evenly matched as well.
The Red Army
was loud. The Flamingos were loud. It was intense. It was a lot of fun.
It was, man. Like, if you missed that out, yo, you missed out on one of the best fan atmospheres out there, yo. Like, it was legit. The trophy looked dope.
Yes. Like,
even though it broke. It broke. That was the funny thing. The trophy, seriously, like, bro, we were like...
Yeah, the base came off.
The handle came off. Like, that's what we get.
Let's fix it back up. Patch it up. Right, let's keep it moving.
So, all right, let's go ahead and get to it, man. So, we lost 1-0. And I got to say, man, it's been the kicker's Achilles heel. It seemed to be a slow start.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I was afraid about coming into the game, because we had the slow start against North Texas. We had the slow start against South Georgia, Tormenta. We had the slow start against Greenville, even though the goal wasn't scored, but we had those two dangerous chances inside of 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And, of course, this game. And honestly, if you take, I'd probably say the 20th minute, all the way up to the 20th minute, kickers were in this game.
Yeah.
But it's like you give them an early goal and... Like everyone
they
said,
don't have to,
that
they don't
my
have
phone
to,
dropping.
They don't have to take as many risks, and they can sit more defensively because they're already 1-0 up.
And that's the thing you saw a lot. Like, it was a lot of... Bulo said it on the Total Soccer Show podcast, where he was like, he doesn't want a lot of long shots. He wants more of those control shots, more of those shots where it's like, all right, we're breaking down their defense, and we're taking good shots in good positions.
Yeah, quality chances.
Quality chances. And the thing was, you saw it, like, we outshot Madison, but a lot of those shots were easy balls that rolled into the goalkeeper, or They didn't have a lot of power behind them.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know, man. It just seemed like we went from what was working, like, even though we went down, we were winning those games. It's like we went down, but you can still see, all right, we're still working.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was the pressure of the night, but it seemed like a lot of individual, like, everyone was trying to do too much and not trying to help out everyone else. Exactly. Does that seem weird?
Yeah. It seems like everyone was pressured to perform. And you would expect that more so from Ford Madison coming away and having because, that many away fans come to support them. But you would think that the Richmond Kickers being like, we're at home.
Yeah.
Let's relax and play our game.
And like, we're playing with house money. Like, let's be real about it. Like, me and you talked about it off air. Richmond is, I mean, coming into the game, we were effectively, what, still eighth?
Yeah.
And us getting into the playoffs, like, everyone knew. Like, everyone, even at the tailgate, knew, like, if we went out, like, it, not if, we have to win out to get into the playoffs. Like, it wasn't like, if we lose here, we lose there. No, it was, win out, we're in.
Yeah.
Like, we literally had to do the Kemba Walker UConn run.
Yeah.
So, everyone was aware of it, and I'm wondering if that kind of got into the players' head about, like, and they started pressuring, because you can see it, like.
Yeah, you can see they were just trying everything.
They were trying everything.
Relax.
They I mean, even what Ivan's challenge and what the 60th minute he went in, you could tell, like, you can just tell when a team is just trying and nothing's coming off. And it's like you get more and you get more frustrated, you get more pissed off, and you're like.
And I mean, there were at least two or three key points in this game, key moments in this game that, if had gone differently, would completely change the complexion of the game. Of course, the first one is the goal in the sixth minute.
Okay. So let's talk about this goal, because me and you, I think we see it the same, but we see it from two different standpoints.
Yeah.
I see it from the standpoint of, I put more of the blame on Ivan, but that's more of because I think he gets caught ball watching. Based on the fact of where Troy and Connor is, I think they have a huge miscommunication. I think Connor is expecting Troy to go to the byline where he holds the space. Yes. And I think Troy is expecting Connor to pick up the man where Troy drops off.
Yeah.
So I think Ivan is seeing and he's like, all right, cool. I'm going to stand my ground and know where to go.
And exactly.
And I think when Tenorio makes his run, I mean, he kind of hit like the D-Jack, like double juke move.
Yeah.
And it catches Ivan off guard. Ivan is like, all right, do I watch the ball or do I watch the man? And by the time he tries to make up his mind, that ball is looping over. It falls to Tenorio. And funny thing is, even four fans, if they're being real, got to admit, like, yo, our strikers suck in front of goal.
Yeah.
Because he bobbles it at first.
Mm-hmm.
And almost misses it.
Yeah.
But he got a second chance at it and scores it. You see it a totally different way.
Yeah. No, I see this situation. First of all, as a center back, I feel Ivan has to be aware of who was it who crossed the ball in?
For Ford?
Yes.
I can't remember the top of my head.
Basically, he has to make sure that he can't split, because Troyer and Connor are dangerously far apart. And because they're dangerously far apart, he has to be careful. He has to pay attention. It was Nunez. So Nunez is in a position where he could literally split those two defenders, split Troyer and Connor. And now it's up to Ivan to step to protect Akira, to step forward. So he is preparing for that because he knows there's a lot of space between the two, and it's tempting.
Yeah.
It's tempting for Nunez to just cut inside. Connor would be beat. Troyer would be behind him and would have to foul him to do anything, and he's inside the box. So now, with the striker, Tenorio, coming behind, I feel that this is up to Josh Hughes to either take Tenorio or to send some signal or let Ivan know that Tenorio is making a run behind him. Okay. So now, I do feel Ivan is hard done by because he's caught in two situations. It reminds me a lot of Argentina's goal. I mean, no, Germany's goal when they won the World Cup over Argentina in overtime. You can't blame any particular person because...
I mean, no, it was a systematic failure. Exactly. It was.
Ivan is caught in a position where he's damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. Because if he steps towards the ball, Tenorio's open. If he steps towards Tenorio, Nunes has the opportunity to cut inside and have a shot.
Okay, but isn't Nunes like so far away that even if he does decide to cut, Connor and Troy will effectively be creating like a V, like vacuum sealing him in. And that's a shot, his shot chances decrease.
Well, not really because Connor is moving out. Troyer's moving towards the goal line. And once he cuts inside, Connor's out of it because he's moving away from where the ball is going.
Yeah.
And Troyer's behind the play and would have to foul the man to get anything done.
That's true. I mean, I just feel like miscommunication has been something that has hurt us a lot.
Yeah.
It has hurt us a lot. And I mean, this is no jab at Ford, but let's be real. You take all three of these games, they all come down to one mistake made by one team or another.
Mm-hmm.
The first game, I think, what was it? DJ got thrown a loose ball that a forward player mishandled. We scored, win that game, 1-0. The second game, I think it was miscommunication at the back on us.
Mm-hmm.
They scored. This game, miscommunication in the first 5 minutes, they score. So it's like all these three games were evenly matched. It's just one moment that flipped it.
Yes.
And then Richmond is so like, all right, we know we have to score two to win, that it's kind of just like, all right, let's turn it on. And I mean, granted, they did.
And they dominated most of the second half. However,
because you know me, you know I'm like weirdly like pessimistic but optimistic at the same time.
Yes.
I think there's like a legit term for that. It might be realistic. I don't know. I'm somethingistic. But like I was saying, like even in the game, I was like, yo, there's another goal in this game. There's another goal.
It never came. It never came. And I felt like if we were playing this game even for another, if we were there all night, nothing would have fell. It was just one of those situations where the goal was a fluke and this game was supposed to be 0-0 apart from that fluke.
Yeah, and I mean, like, honestly, even if you go look at the highlights, they only show you the first half.
Yeah.
They don't show you the second half because the second half was just
didn't have much.
It was played in the middle of the midfield. It was like both teams would get the ball and we couldn't do nothing. Like, I think the biggest problem for Richmond this year has been, granted, our defense has been solid, but I think it's been miscommunication in the back line just because of like certain parts. Because I think certain key parts have been out in certain moments. Like Akwe got suspended for one game. So that's someone you're relying on. I think Troy has been in and out of the lineup. He's been more in than out because of injuries. Josh Hughes, Greg, Bulldog. It's been miscommunication in those parts. And then,
well, if you see, those are the positions that have been rotated.
Yeah.
A lot.
But then even on the attacking side, it's like, Joey Chen and Gallardo, as much as we love them, we got to be real. Like, they were pretty much written out of the game.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you go look at Nate by... Nate
by Northwest.
Yeah. He had a good article that came out today, 10 things to pull away from this game. It made him were kind of talking. And it makes sense. Like, you know, kickers kind of go with just three in the back. But it seemed like our wingers were mostly pinned in. Like...
Yeah. So we were basically playing with five in the back. Lockerbie and Bulldog.
Yeah, we're used to seeing Lockerbie and Bulldog. I mean, not Bulldog. Hughes kind of be midfielders and push up to help out with Chin. But if they're so pulled back, I mean, granted.
It's basically Chin who was isolated
up
top.
Yeah, and I understand.
And Gallardo was cut off from him.
And like we said, like we know forward is this fast pace. They're true expression of running gun.
Yeah.
So I understand you want that five in the back. But you still have to allow your wingers when we're in possession to push up.
Yeah.
And that is taxing because then you're thinking like, all right, well, if they push all the way to tennis, now I'm relying on Ivan, Connor, and Akwe to cover everything.
A whole lot of space.
And if it was only Troyer there that's holding down that holding mid spot.
Well, see, that's the thing. And that's where Akwe and Ivan come into play. Akwe is a very mobile player.
Yeah, he
is. And Ivan does well as a fullback. in that situation, if the wingers go up, you're playing with three in the back, and if there's a quick counter, that's when Troyer needs to get back to make a back four. So yeah. Then Akwe and Ivan would push out. Troyer would sit next to Shinovsky, and now we have a back four defending that fast break.
Yeah.
But, I mean, aside from that, another moment in the game was the aftermath of Ivan's foul and yellow card.
Yo. all right, so this is like the problem is that, like, we've been talking about, I feel like the whole thing has just been the kickers, like, rushing. But I got to admit it to you. It was an aggressive challenge.
It was an aggressive challenge.
But I'm not going to lie. Like, when that challenge happened, I was expecting that red card to come up.
Yeah. No, I mean, I understand. Let me put it in
this premise. And I'm not trying to be the person who just basically blamed this game with a referee. But once again, let's be real. If you're a referee, even Ted would say, yeah, be consistent. Like, even Ted would say it. And Ted, by the way, is hilarious when it comes to refereeing. but let's be real about it. Like, if you're going to let us play for 60 minutes, let us play in the last 30. Don't all of a sudden be like, well, now we're going to be, like, extremely hard on you. Like, if you're calling stuff tight in the first 70, call it tight in the last 20. Like, I think the thing was, it was, like, be mad consistent. Because in the first 70 minutes, it was free-flowing. It was a challenge here, a challenge there. There was no real, like, lockdown.
Yeah.
But then, all of a sudden, like, I get that Ivan challenge. I get that. And I get that moment happened in front of their bench, their supporters right there behind them. Mm-hmm. And I understand how hyperbolic that moment could be.
I think we can go even further with your statement about be consistent. If you're gonna let them play for 60 minutes, let them play for 90. But also, if you do wish to change and be more strict all around.
Yeah.
Because one situation that I did notice happen, and I think everyone, especially nowadays with some of the changes in the rules, and even before then, is fully aware of. After Ivan commits that foul, the referee comes and gives him a yellow card. Immediately, you have three, four Ford Madison players complaining to the referee that it should have been a straight red.
Yeah.
Now, I can understand in that moment you're going crazy, whatever. But J.C. Banks, number 29 for Ford Madison, on three occasions during that altercation, during that moment of them arguing, pushed the referee's shoulder three times. Got in the referee's face and pushed him three times. Anytime you touch an official, that is an automatic red card. Not a single card was thrown. Three times. So if you're going to start getting strict, the first time Banks touches you, he needs to be headed to the locker room.
And I mean, look.
And now imagine for those last 30 minutes, Ford Madison are playing a man down. Yeah. That is a completely different game.
And then the other thing, too, about it is, like, I understand, because for those who have ever played soccer with me know that I am a hothead sometimes. and even I've been sent off for cussing at a ref, even though the ref did a horrible job, and I will stand by that statement to the day I die. But even J.C. Banks, like, walks away, and you, like, we're standing in section O, and we're looking, and you can tell, everyone knows when someone is cussing on a ref. Everyone knows it.
Yeah, he's cussing him out. He's using him out. Probably using profanity.
Oh, and probably not the word. And he's dropping every
and laying word. Hands on the referee, yeah. Which is and something that you happened. And nothing happens. No card, nothing.
And even Troy is about to happen at the top of the box. Like, even the one of the four players that was warming up, you can see him and, like, he's just like, he's talking to the other person. He's like, yo, that's not a foul. Like, he was like, that's not a foul. And I'm just like, yo, like, you wasn't calling these challenges the first 70 minutes. Like, you were letting it go.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you call the game tight. So it was like any momentum the kickers get
is killed, like, yeah, by you and, calling.
And I don't want to come across as that fan that's like, I don't want to just blame it totally on the refs and be like, that's why the kickers lost. Because we got to be real. Like, the kickers had their own individual mistakes.
I mean, and also you also have to take into consideration there are a lot of situations in which forward Madison players made good tackles and the ref calls them a foul.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just all of a sudden everyone was like, did y'all switch or something?
No.
Because it all of a sudden you're calling these fouls that when they were happening in the first half were not fouls.
Yeah.
So I think it really killed what the game could have been.
Yeah.
It really killed the momentum of the game in the towards the end there.
Because I would say this, like, USL had a real gem of a game on their hand, because I think this is the first game you legitimately had two supporter groups in the same stadium in a game that mattered.
Yes.
First of all, USL League One did a horrible job of hyping this game up because there was little to no mention of it outside of those that were tweeting about it, and they got massive blow up because you had the FC meme machine of Ford Madison like blowing it up, so you know we got blow up on Twitter.
Yeah.
I'm going on my own personal rant now, and I'm not trying not to. But it just, like, this goes back to what I've said on League One Fun of, if you're going to have VAR, and I know VAR is a hot button topic, and I know everyone is...
Some are against it, some are for it.
Yeah, and the way how they do it in Europe is, by the way, a horrible example, because UEFA does it one way, but Premier League does it one way, and Bundesliga does it one way.
Yeah.
That's a whole number of times for a different day. But I think... if you're going to bring it to MLS, and we've already had it here in U.S. Championship.
Mm-hmm.
We had it when we played the Rebels, I think 2 years ago, we had VAR.
Yeah.
So if you try it out here, just bring it to the U.S. League One, and a lot of these challenges get fixed.
Yeah.
Like I said, like if you can record in one studio in Orlando, you can use VAR in one studio. Make it work.
Yeah.
It's not hard.
Yeah.
I got really nothing else to say about this game. You?
Not really. It is unfortunate, and you would hope that there is something done to kind of increase the quality of the officiating.
Yeah.
To be honest with you,
I think every team has had that problem.
Exactly, that's the thing that I was about to say is that I'm not saying this as a Kickers fan, because you're hearing this across the entire league. You're hearing everybody say the officiating is horrible, and it's not just because calls were made against the Kickers. And like I said, there were a lot of tackles that Ford Madison were making that in my head I'm thinking that's not a foul.
No.
But the ref is calling it a foul. Yeah. The ref is allowing players to get in his face, to cuss him out, to push him without giving out
cards.
And
this is the other thing, too. Without taking charge of the game. I think a lot of these refs, and I think NFL is a whole different example, but I think it's some similarities about how the refs in USL, and I believe most MLS, I think all soccer refs are part-time.
Yeah.
So it's like, even the time they can use to fully dedicate, they have another job they're worrying about.
Yeah.
So it's like, I kind of just wish if U.S. soccer, not wish, I want U.S. soccer, if you're going to be serious about this game, you got to get refs at a full time that are fully dedicated on learning, like, all right, this is that. Learning, like, the ins and outs, because that's the only way how you're going to make the quality of the game better. Everyone's on the same board, and I kind of wish they would do something about, like, showing us, like, hey, this is why we call this. This is why this is a foul. This is why this is not a foul. Like, if a ref explained, if there was a video or, like, a Twitter page or whatever, and they used that Troyer tackle and explained, this is why we gave the yellow card in this instance to Troyer, then I would be like, all right, cool. I'm still pissed about it because I don't want Troyer to get a yellow card.
But at least I am aware of what to do. Exactly.
And not every ref refs the game the same.
No.
Same with that. Coaches the same.
So exactly. And you're going to...
There's never going to be uniformity about it. But exactly. At least it's more transparent that when we know, like, all right, we know. I think most people's frustration when it comes to refs in USL, MLS, or wherever is just because there's no transparency.
Yeah. It's just a stadium full of people saying, what the heck was that?
Yeah.
And
there's no transparency.
Guess what? The bench is saying it too.
By the way, we also love USL referees. ProRel are great. They do nothing wrong. That way we don't get fined. all right, let's go ahead and move on. Let's talk about an upcoming game on Saturday. We get FC Tucson. It is a late game, 10:30. Also, by the way, for those who live in Richmond, Baja Bean is closing in October, so the last two watch parties this week and next week against Chattanooga are going to be at Baja Bean. Yeah. So if you are in the city of Richmond, if you listen to this podcast, share it. Tell your friends. There's a watch party at Baja Bean. We're going out there to support because they're going out of business. They've been great to us.
Yes.
We went there and watched the Champions League final.
Yeah.
We watched Ted cry like a baby when Liverpool won. I will still always hold that against him.
And I'll still say that that was one of the most boring Champions League finals ever.
I don't think you're lying about that. But FC Tucson comes in losing two games, same as Richmond, but they have gave up 9 goals in those games. It's... First of all, let's talk about our playoff chances. So now we're 9th in the table. Mm-hmm. We are 9th. Do you, and I asked a question on Twitter, like, do you still have, you know, hope? Like, do you still think we could get in? Are you, like, kind of like, maybe? Or are you,
mathematically,
like,
mathematically, we can. Now, the probability.
Until we have that E beside our name, like Orlando did.
Exactly.
We still got a chance. Yeah. But.
Hey, we're still mathematically in the race.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
I'm going to have to sacrifice some baby goats.
Which is crazy because with just a few games left in the season for each team, first through ninth are still in for the playoffs.
Yeah.
And third and fourth could drop out of the playoffs.
Yeah.
It's absolutely crazy. It's really, really crazy how that is. It makes it for a fun league.
It does. I mean, this is the thing, man. Like, let's be real about it. Toronto plays Greenville Friday at 4 p.m. I'm assuming Greenville wins. That helps us out. We beat Tucson. And if we beat Tucson, we go to 7.
Yeah, we go to 7.
That's how crazy it is. We go to 7. If we beat Chattanooga next week, we can be as high as...
As 6.
Or 5th.
Or 5th.
Depending on how South Georgia does.
Well, I mean, South Georgia have not been doing well. They've... Yeah. Lost 3 of their last 5 games, and the other 2 were 1-1 draws. They haven't scored more than 1 goal in a game.
They ain't a lot. And I asked a couple of people this question. I was just like, who's had it worse? Richmond coming into the league with the expectations of, we're the oldest team in here, we're the boy, we know what we're doing, we're supposed to win the league title. Mm-hmm. And then we hit that dry spell of losing 7 out of 8. Or South Georgia, who was 2nd in the table. Everyone was like, oh, they're a lock for the playoffs. And just completely tailspin.
Tanking, yes. They're like, just tanking.
Like, honestly, yo. Like, who's had it worse?
I think, I don't know. I don't know. I do feel that.
Wow. It's just
their last win is in July.
Yeah.
Their last one is in July, and that's still against Orlando City B, so that doesn't really count.
Yeah. All right.
Their last win before that was against us in June.
Yeah. And, like, all right, so let's get back to Tucson. So Tucson lost 5-0 to Lansing and lost 4-0 to Greenville.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about our record against Lansing. Greenville, we recently just beat.
Yeah, we can't really talk about our record against Lansing because we played all 3 of our games against Lansing at the very beginning of the season. Everyone was still developing. Everyone was still building. So that Lansing team is not the same Lansing team who would face them today.
Yeah, and this also starts of Tucson doesn't have to go on the road anymore after this. So the rest of their games are at home. They play us. They play Greenville. They play Ford. They play North Texas. So outside of us, FC Tucson definitely controls their dynasty. And I think that, like, more than ever, this game definitely kills. Like, whoever loses this game, or this game ends in a draw. If this game ends in a draw, it's a wrap for both teams. Both teams not getting it. If it's a loss for either team, the team that lost is done. It's a wrap.
So, look, at the end of the day, here's my thing. If we do end up getting a draw against Tucson, I think we need to be sabotaging as many teams as possible to the end of the season.
Oh, most definitely. Oh, most definitely. Like, look, we got to be real. Playoffs, I sound like they go, playoffs? playoffs was always going to be a hard reach. I had hope, but my hope was kind of just like, all right, let's make it happen.
Yeah.
If we do not get in, if things do not fall our way, You can't really even think about that. But I would say you can ruin Tucson season. You can ruin Chattanooga season.
South Georgia season.
And, I mean, honestly, we play Toronto and we play Orlando, but that doesn't really help anyone. But depending on if we beat Tucson and them, who else season do we ruin in the process? You get what I'm saying?
Not really anyone else. I mean, South Georgia at this point.
But I'm saying it's like a domino effect.
Yeah.
You knock off this team, that this team go knock off that team, and this, that, and third. I don't know. It'd be interesting. It's going to be a late game, so.
Yeah. That's going to be, yeah. It's going to be a late game. the thing is, we already know that it's going to be, we're going to be going fighting an uphill battle with Chattanooga, especially with them, their next game. While we're playing Tucson, they're playing Orlando City.
And I think the Chattanooga game, I think out of the four, I mean, granted, the last two home games are important. Those are the last two home games.
Yeah.
And I think if, you know, you definitely win those two. Those two are a must win regardless. I think the Chattanooga game is probably the next important game.
Yeah.
Because you lost, the last two to them? And I think the one that we lost on, once again, miscommunication, we was on a horrible run of form. I think, honestly, if you beat Chattanooga, oh my God. Oh my God. Like, that would be perfect. Ruin their season?
that would be great.
Man, you know how, everyone in U.S. soccer is in love with Fort Madison? I think Chattanooga FC would be in love with us if we ruined their season and knocked them out the playoffs. That's just me. Also tonight, we have some listener questions.
All right.
So, first question comes from Kyle from Featherstone Flamingos. He said, what position do you think is the strongest and what position can use the most depth? I think we both agree most depth is center back. We have three center backs.
Yeah, we only have three center backs. If either of them get injured, we're screwed.
You're looking up a back line of Troyer and Hughes? Maybe?
No, let's say if God forbid.
Or, Perez, new kid.
If Akwe were to get injured, I mean, you're looking at having to go back to a four in the back. And when this three in the back has kind of been working for us, it would really suck to have to go back to be forced to go back to a four in the back where it wasn't really working before.
Yeah.
So.
I think Bulo's big goal for next year is to get more defensive backup.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, we had. And he went back to Columbus Crew, so it really put us down to three center backs. I think that's going to be a big thing for us is getting defensive help.
And if you look at it, we don't really have any fullbacks.
No, but I think if you're using three in the back, I think you want more wing backs.
You want more fluidity. Yeah, you want.
But I would give you saying, if we have to go to four in the back,
you want.
Yeah, we don't. Some outside of Lockerbie,
fullbacks. Lockerbie's a wing back. He's definitely placed too high up to be a complete fullback.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so, we don't have fullbacks.
Ivan is
Akwe, if you push him out there, he can play fullback.
Yeah, Ivan as well.
But I think
those three in the back, you want them back there. Yeah. But if you need to pick and like switch someone out, you need to be able to replace them with this another center.
Yeah, that's true. So, and I think the position that probably has the most depth is, oddly enough, our midfield.
Our midfield.
We have a lot of midfield.
We have great midfield.
The only thing that's hurt our midfield is just injuries.
Injuries, yeah.
Because Bulldog's been out.
Amas has been out.
Greg's been out. Gallardo's been pretty much healthy the whole year. Kraft is just not starting to find his form. Maxie's had his dip in form. Troy is coming back from injury.
Greg is in there.
Yeah, I think
and if we
Hughes, you could throw Hughes in there.
Hughes is in there.
I think, honestly, if we just get healthy in midfield, I think if you're looking at a different season. Not a different season, but I think you're looking at more consistency. Because, like I said, when Bodo's playing well, we're scoring. We're going places.
Yeah. You know?
It's just been inconsistency and hurt there at that position. This is a question from Nate. He says, what are your plans for the podcast in the off season? I think we both talked about it. First and foremost, we're looking to buy t-shirts from For the Culture. Link in the show notes down below.
Yep.
So support the podcast. Take a picture in it. You know, I think we're talking about ordering scarves. We're trying to find a good supplier for that. Buying better equipment. You're in a coach's salary. I'm on a teacher's salary. Equipment's hard to come by. And I think it's, we're looking to do a couple of more interviews. Definitely one with Total Soccer Show, Bulow, and just overall stuff. I think we're definitely going to take a long break after this.
Yeah.
A nice long break. So if you don't hear from us for like a good month, just know that we're both alive.
Yeah.
And we probably might put a couple of other episodes back out there, like a couple of interviews we did during the year, put them back out there.
To kind of keep it going, basically, keep the podcast.
But make I gotta sure you say, guys
don't forget about
it. Yeah, most definitely. But I gotta say, definitely for year one, it's been a lot more than what I expected.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, I'm not gonna lie to you. Like, honestly, when we first started this, if you would have told me that we were averaging north of 75, 80 listeners a podcast, I would have been like, where are those 75, 80 people coming from?
Exactly.
Like, where are they coming from? Because there's only 20 of us in the Red Army on a given day.
Yeah.
Where are these other people coming from? So I think, and honestly, I think this podcast has been good for the community of Richmond. You know, it's, it can only get better from here. Year two, we're looking to do better, bigger things, but
yeah, and we appreciate the support. I mean, it's been
it's been dope, man. Another question by Nate: does the club manage to hold on to Gallardo for another season? So I'll open this question up, and I'll put three players out there. Do we manage to hold on to Gallardo, Maxi Rodriguez, Akwe?
If we want to be competitive next year, and we want to be able to keep this system that Bulow has gotten these guys to buy into in form, we need to keep those three players. Those three players must stay. We need to find a way to keep them there. When you look at someone like Connor Shinovsky, he is a big key to that. However, Connor Shinovsky has already proven that he is loyal.
Yeah.
Akwe's new. Maxi's new. Gallardo is new. Those are the players that we need to make sure that we are keeping. When you look, even up front, when you look at players like Chin and Daniel Jacks, we would want to keep those players too. But as strikers, it's a lot easier to get a striker to assimilate into a system than a midfielder or a center back.
Yeah.
And you get someone new in one of those three spots, you're up for another rebuild. And we don't need that.
So I will say this, because I'm going to be real. We're in League One. And the way how I'm looking at League One, we don't know. This is the first year of the league. And it might be a, if there's anything like how the English League One is, you got teams that stick together and they kind of build and build and build and build. And not a lot of Premier League teams pull from them.
Yeah.
If they do, they're on reserves.
Yeah.
Or are we going to be the league where it's going to be like how we were in the championship, where we knew the kicker team, but then it was like massive turnover. Like the last 2 years of the kickers is massive turnover and we're not doing well. Or is it like the kickers of old where these teams are sticking together 2, 3, 4 years at a time? So we don't know that.
Yeah.
If I had to be real with myself, I think Gallardo stays one more year. And I think that's seriously, don't you get me wrong, Gallardo is, all three of these players are loyal.
Yeah.
But I think Gallardo showed, one, he's coming back from injury. He still has the talent. He has the potential. He has the ability. I think a second year for him would do wonders for him. And it shows that he's consistent. He's getting better. I almost think about, like, players that are in, like, college football. Like, you know how players, their junior year, they could be like, all right, you had this great year. Do you go to the NFL? Or do you stay for your senior year and get and try to hit another level?
Yeah.
You know, Maxi the same way. Now, Maxi started off as that captain. Unfortunately, he got demoted to the bench, and he hasn't been back to what we saw at the beginning of the year. I think Maxi might stay just to prove it, or he might move on.
Who knows? I don't know. I feel that Maxi will stay because I think his demotion to the bench has nothing to do with his ability.
Yeah, I get that. But
it has to do with a change in system.
But then that's what I'm saying.
In which
I don't think there's any hard feelings with Maxie, but I think Maxie would look at it like, all right, there's a change in system. I'll use the example of AP. When AP went to the Saints, AP was like, I'm still going to be used how I use in Minnesota. I'm going to run the ball. The offense is going to go around me. But you in New Orleans, when you got Drew Brees, and we throwing this thing 50 times.
Yeah.
So then he's like, all right, this not working. Trade me. He goes to Arizona, and he has a 1,000-yard season.
Yeah.
That's why I think it comes down to Maxie. I think if Maxie's not able to fit into the system, he knows, like, all right, I see the writing on the wall. Let me go somewhere else where I fit.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a thing of
I don't know.
I'm pissed because
I'm not getting playing time.
Yeah, I don't think it's that. I think it's just like
I do agree, but the fact that every once in a while, I mean, the fact that almost every game he's either coming off the bench or maybe even starting.
That's true.
Over Troyer makes me feel that there is another element of this midfield that Bulo wants to add. And if there is another element of this midfield that Bulo wants to add, there may be a chance that he can get this team into a system where Maxie and Troyer are on the field at the same time.
And other than
and if that's the case,
and that's the other thing too, is like you look at these players and like I even got caught up in it. Like I was like, oh, they're the same age as me. And then you go look, you're like, dang, they're like 22, 23, 24. Yeah. Like they're young. And you think about it, like, for a player like Maxie, who didn't get a lot of starting time. Mm-hmm. At San Antonio to come here and be the starter and go through that
and be the captain.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
And still learning.
Yeah.
You know, it's all new. So second year we can see. Akwe, ain't gonna lie to you. I love my man. Also, shout out to him. He made team of the week.
Yes. Again, I think he's made team of the week more than anybody on this kicker squad this season.
I think so. And so honestly, it shows you how good of a defender he is that he made team of the week in two losses.
Yep.
He made it for the North Texas game and this game. That shows you how good of a defender he is. And I hate to say it, I think somebody coming for Akwe.
Yeah.
If someone does, I hope they pay a fee.
Someone's paying a big check for Akwe. And I don't want to see that happen because when you have a player.
I don't either, man. Like I don't.
And out of the three, I would think he is the most likely to be gone.
You know what he could be? He could be what Hugh Roberts was. You remember how Hugh had that year where he made USL Team of the Year?
Oh,
and we were just like, yo, he is locked down?
Yeah.
Akwe could be that, man.
Imagine if he's on that level.
And yo, imagine if we still had that back line of those two.
I mean, you're taking it back to the days when we still had Yambi. And I mean...
Oh, my God. That back line would be... It would be awesome. All right. I wish it was a way on FIFA 20 that you could get, like, you could download teams, and I would just make that backline and just see how it would work. It would be fun. But yeah, I honestly think awkward. And it would be no hard feelings because I'm like, you proved it.
You've proved it. If you're making team of the week in, week out, almost, and even though the team is having rises and dips in form, in a league, and it's like people say, if you're the sharpest knife in the drawer, gotta find a new drawer. And it hurts me to say it, but yeah, I think out of those three, Akwe is the most likely to.
I think Akwe is the most likely.
But going to Nate's question, like you said, I do feel that we might be able to hang on to Gallardo for at least another year.
Yeah,
depending on what happens.
I think the main thing for Gallardo to walk on, of course, everyone talks about his passing, but I think there's more of where he is in the system and what the role is for him. Because he's not the number 10 of, like you made the comparison a couple of weeks ago. He's not like Kraft where he's going to sit there. And by the way, Kraft had a good game in this one.
He did.
Second consecutive start. Boy played good.
He did. He did. Big ups to Kraft, man.
But Gallardo, I think he's different from Kraft in that number 10 role where Kraft is more of that cerebral assassin. Like, I'm going to make the pass that's going to score the goal.
Yeah.
Gallardo's more of give me the ball and let me do it. Basketball comparison again. I know I use basketball a lot because I think basketball and soccer have a lot of comparisons.
They do have a lot in common
here. I think Gallardo is like Kobe.
Yeah. Give me the ball and
he going to do work. He might have five turnovers in the game. But he gonna give you 40.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Kraft is more of the Steve Nash.
Steve Nash dish.
I might not give you 20.
But
I'm gonna give you 10 assists.
I'm gonna give you definitely in the double digits.
And that's the thing that we don't have, I think, when it comes to that number 10 role, you don't have, I mean, outside of Balduke, who is almost like that Steve Nash role, you don't have another person that's in that Gallardo mindset in that position. Because Gallardo, if he's playing striker.
That. You need that.
Yeah, if Gallardo's playing striker, I feel like it works, but that's not his natural fit. No. But if you put him in the midfield where it is his natural fit, then it hinders the midfield just because of how he plays.
I'm not sure about hindering the midfield. I do feel that there is more work that needs to be done on Gallardo.
Hindering the midfield, I mean in terms of like
the fluidity.
Yeah, he's not going to make, because Gallardo knows, like,
give me the ball, I'm going to just take everybody on.
He's not looking to make that another extra pass. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, he's not looking to make that killer pass.
Like, I'll use the South Georgia game, for example. When he cuts up South Georgia's defense, if that's Kraft in that position,
he's dishing it off to Chin.
He's dishing it off to Chin.
And of course, you're probably going to get the same result of a goal, but you've got to think psychologically.
Yeah.
Because in that mindset, now imagine you're Greenville or you're Chattanooga and you're watching the tape and you're like, God, this dude just cut that defense wide open like a knife through butter.
And you can see it. Ford honed in on Gallardo.
Yeah.
And I think that's the one thing that hurts Richmond in the attack, because teams hone in on Gallardo.
And then we have nothing else.
We have nothing else.
But that is with regards to Gallardo, there needs to be some development there with regards to realizing when he's got the microscope on him to maybe
and
make like he's going to continue to do the same way, and that draws in everybody. Yeah.
And I think that's the thing. I think Gallardo, he can easily get 10 and 10 in this league.
Yeah.
There's no reason why he cannot get 10 and 10. And you got to remember, he's a young player. I think he's, only 20?
Yeah, I think so.
With that, like, there's a lot of growth in him, a lot more development. Other players like Mendez, Boateng, there's a lot of development in those guys. Last question. This is from Mert. Favorite thing about following the Kickers?
There's a lot.
One thing. It's kind of like a sympathy question. Favorite thing about following the Kickers?
My favorite thing about following the Kickers, to be honest with you, is the camaraderie and atmosphere at City Stadium.
Yeah, I agree.
And how close to the fans.
I would have never found my best friend to you if it wasn't for the Kickers.
And also, I mean, just how close to the fans the players are.
Yeah.
And how easy it is to just to be able to talk to them and to hang out with them if the occasion arises.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I agree. I think it's camaraderie. I probably butchered that word. I think it's just all of that. I mean, like, honestly, like, last week you asked me to be the godparent of your child.
Yeah.
That would never happen if we never had the Kickers.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't. I would have gotten engaged to elected, but it probably would have never happened the way it did.
Yeah, exactly.
If it wasn't for the Kickers. So, there's a lot of love there for the Kickers. Also, support your local regardless.
Exactly. Support your local. Always support your local.
But, quick update. I forgot to mention at the beginning of the podcast. The reason why this show is coming out on Tuesday and not how it normally drops on Monday morning is because of the fact I had to leave right after the game to go to Charlotte. It was a day trip. I'm still, like, kind of tired from it. I'm actually, like, kind of sick of you kind of hearing my voice. But my mother-in-law is doing a lot better. She actually got discharged from the hospital today.
Awesome.
So thank you for everyone that text, call, whatever. She's doing a lot better. My wife is a warrior. I will say that about her. So this show is brought to you by Roughneck Scars, the BGN, and of course, For the Culture United. If you want to support us, go to the show notes down below. There is a link to the shirt. We are going to order ours soon so we can rock it, because we can't ask you to buy a shirt and we don't rock it.
Yeah.
Shouts out to everyone that came down for the Henny Derby. This is not a one-time thing. We're going to keep doing this.
Yep, every time we play Madison.
It's trophies on the line. Thank you to everyone that came out for Heritage Night. We raised a boatload of money. We had a great time. Yeah. And with that being said, this is Elliot.
This is Shaneer.
Keep us on the good side.